City Limits is a production of WAER, Syracuse Public Media, and is funded by generous grant support from the Central New York Community Foundation, Grossman St. Amour CPAs, National Grid, and listeners like you. To support the project, visit the City Limits About page at citylimitsproject.org.
41,000 Syracuse residents were below the poverty line in 2016.
At its core, poverty is about pushing down instead of having an opportunity to go up.
It's, generally speaking, lack of access to opportunity.
This is City Limits, a poverty project.
Welcome to City Limits. I'm Scott Willis. Recent numbers from the U.S. Census Bureau about poverty in Syracuse are not encouraging. The city ranked 9th worst in the nation overall in 2017, essentially unchanged from the previous year, while poverty declined almost everywhere else in the state and nation. The problem became even deeper for Hispanics in Syracuse, where the number living in poverty surged from 40% in 2016 to 58% last year. Ask any Syracuse Common Councilor or Onondaga County Legislator representing the city, and they'll say they don't need numbers to illustrate the poverty they know and see in their districts every day. In this episode of City Limits, trying to understand and combat poverty as a lawmaker, and what local government can and cannot do to address this ongoing, intractable problem.
Scott from WAER here, and we're just taking a walk through the neighborhood, and I thought he might want to stop in and say hi to you guys, if that's okay with you guys.
I've joined 3rd District Common Councilor Susan Boyle at a small brown house on West Newell Street on the city's south side. There's a spread of bagels, danishes, coffee, and cider, and several neighbors have gathered on couches and chairs around a large table. One of them is Audrey Haskell, Board Vice President of the Southside Interfaith Community Development Corporation. She's lived in the neighborhood for more than 60 years.
We meet once a month, the last Thursday of every month, and I just put out a general notice. As people sign up when they come, I add them to the mailing list. I send out a general email, and who comes, comes. That's it. We never know. This particular meeting is like sitting around your dining room table having a conversation. We probably don't discuss world issues, but they're the issues that are important to us. And I think so many people are not aware, for instance, that what does a common counselor do? Well, you can go talk to your common counselor. They don't know that. We have no agenda, so if anybody's got a question, this is a good place to come, because chances are you'll run into somebody from an organization where you can get your answer.
On this day, one of the topics of concern is the looming closure of the top supermarket in Valley Plaza, about a mile away. Executive Director of the group, Diane Turner, also runs the Farm Fresh food truck and is worried how residents without transportation will get quality groceries.
It put more pressure onto the mobile market. And so we are got people on the waiting list right now, you know, that's calling. But I see that it's going to put more on us, because now we got to try to reach those people. Do I create a market in the office? It's going to be a lot of pressure again. Mm-hmm. And I see it more so now. You know, I just need another truck and some manpower, you know, to get out there once again.
Yeah, it definitely is a problem. It's a severe problem as far as, I think, in particular, the food issues. You know, we call it the food desert, and it really is a food desert. That's why our mobile market, I mean, we have so many calls to have that go that we just can't keep up with it.
So here we are. This is McKinley Park. McKinley is sort of the center of this neighborhood, okay. And a lot of people in this community are working now to try to reinvent this neighborhood as the McKinley community, you know, with signs like other neighborhoods have. But as you can see, this park is pretty much empty. You know, we came in last year and planted all these trees with a lot of help from the community. It was really inspiring. Onondaga Earth Corps came in with ESF with a bunch of these trees, and we all got together with shovels and some students from some of the schools around, and we dug holes and planted the trees, and people from the community were jumping off their bikes and pulling up their pants and running down here and planting trees with us. And it was really cool to see how much they appreciated an investment in this park.
Councillor Susan Boyle's district covers a diverse array of neighborhoods. From the south side, it stretches north, then west through Strathmore all the way to the Winkworth neighborhood. It also dips down into the valley before crossing I-81 to include the outer Comstock neighborhood. She's hopeful that the attention by the city and county on McKinley Park, combined with the efforts of neighbors, will serve as a catalyst for the larger revitalization of the surrounding area.
What are the characteristics of this neighborhood? You know, we've acknowledged there is some crime and it does have some housing issues.
It's complicated. I think there are some really invested neighbors in this neighborhood. Actually, we're on Primrose Ave right now, and there's a Primrose Neighborhood Watch that meets regularly that are very engaged, and they keep a close eye on what's going on and communicate with the police and try to keep the neighborhood safe. They keep their properties up, and they're working towards change, and that's how change is made. They have a lot on their plate. We have a lot of children in the area, and we have a lot of working poor in the neighborhood. You know, I would probably guess that the majority of these people do have jobs and do work, and that's sort of the difficult part of it. You know, when you know people are working hard and they're trying, and only so much money to go around when you're working a minimum wage job or evening jobs and things like that. So that's definitely an issue, yeah.
Do you hear from those residents, you know, who have concerns over any number of things that maybe the city itself, you know, and you as a councilor can't tackle?
Yeah, and we try to connect people to community resources that are available and the support network that is available in the city of Syracuse. There are a number of job training programs that people are trying to encourage, particularly city residents, to participate in for construction work and different kinds of jobs that are coming down the road with 81 and some of the Joint Schools Construction Board programs that are coming on. So those are some better paying jobs, and we're really hopeful to see those jobs go to city residents.
Councillor Boyle says transportation and childcare are some of the biggest challenges facing residents who might be trying to lift themselves out of poverty. Then there are the absentee landlords who don't maintain their properties. That was a recurring concern among all three legislators I spoke to for this story. Boyle says code enforcement and the land bank are working hard to stay on top of any issues. Here on the city's north side, vacant houses are fewer and farther between. Still, just one abandoned house can be a symptom of a larger problem. I caught up with 5th District Councilor Joe Driscoll in front of a vacant house that's been causing trouble in one neighborhood.
Shortly after I got into office, this house was brought to my attention by a constituent, and it's just been a real eyesore and just problem for all the neighbors. The neighborhood kids hang out in here. They use it as their kind of, you know, de facto headquarters and home base. You know, there's been a lot of fights out here. There's been a stabbing nearby, reports of drug activity and weapons around here. And a lot of it is centered around this vacant property.
How would you characterize this neighborhood in general, though? You know, where does this fit in the larger neighborhood?
You know, I think most of the council districts are mixed. You know, I think depending on, you go block to block, and you'll see some blocks that are really stable with great houses. I use the analogy of each block is like a set of teeth, and you get one or two rotten teeth, and then kind of the whole jawline can get messed up pretty quickly if it's not treated properly. So this otherwise is a great neighborhood, and there's a lot of concerned neighbors. You know, you see the wreaths on the door and the flower beds and the things that the neighbors that are trying to take care of it. And then every few you see one that's, you know, the paint's chipped off and the front porch is falling down. And I think that's where the rubber meets the road with the council and trying to stabilize these neighborhoods and create better environments for our constituents.
Considering large economic disparities in various neighborhoods, how difficult is it to balance maybe some of the really dire needs that you see and maybe hear about, and then, you know, trying to also address a vacant house on a corner in an otherwise fairly stable neighborhood?
It's really hard. A lot of the time, you get to a point where it's hard to know where to begin when some neighborhoods get really overwhelmed. It's really hard to know where the lift is in some of the neighborhoods. I'm a big believer in synergy and connection. So I feel like if we can stabilize a few of these borderline neighborhoods, maybe we can, you know, start seeing some uptick in the ones that just feel overwhelming sometimes. But I think at the end of the day, you know, all these things, crime, violence, drugs, I think most are symptoms of the greater disease of poverty. And that comes from having a meaningful place in society and having a job that means something to you, or having work that means something to you. And I think, you know, it's not just Syracuse. I think we get unfairly painted a lot of times. But when you look at the poverty index in Rochester and Buffalo and these other places are right up there with us, they're not far away. Rochester actually on the last one was ahead of us. So when you look at upstate, you have an American problem. It's not just a Syracuse problem or an upstate problem. It's an American problem of industrial towns that no longer have industry.
Do you feel, you know, at times, you know, considering some of these bigger, almost intractable problems, that you're just so limited in, you know, what the city can do? I mean, you know what you can maybe do as a counselor, but then, you know, the city obviously strapped for cash. I mean, I'm sure that can maybe be a source of frustration as well. Like, you know, the problems are there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I use a lot of funny metaphors. One that I heard the other day that stuck with me was, at times it feels like punching water. You know, like it doesn't feel very effective. It does feel overwhelming always. But I do think there are things you can do. And poverty in and of itself doesn't have to define quality of life. You know, I've traveled, you know, in my past career, I was a musician, and I've traveled many different countries and seen many different levels of economic prosperity and economic struggle. And some of the happiest and brightest places were people who were struggling economically, but figured out how to make their neighborhoods cozy and warm. And I think that there are ways we can do that, even with a little, even though we're challenged with resources, obviously.
And some of these Counselor Joe Driscoll says those who might need the most help are also those who have little faith in the system and tend to be the least likely to get a hold of their counselors or other representatives. He says his biggest challenge is reaching residents who feel disenfranchised, with hopes of connecting them with services and other tools that might provide a path out of poverty. From Syracuse's north side to the near west side, which has seen plenty of investment over the past decade or so, the Near West Side Initiative injected millions of dollars into old buildings, boosting up organizations and other resources in the neighborhood. Still, it's one of the poorest census tracts in the nation. I met 8th District County Legislator Chris Ryan at Skiddy Park.
We're in a neighborhood, you know, that has a reputation for crime and poverty, you know,
yeah.
It has for many years. So I guess as a legislator, though, what does this neighborhood mean to you, or what do you know it as, or how would you define it outside of those labels that it's had for so many years?
You know, I've walked the neighborhood. I've gone door to door. They have this summer festival here at Skiddy Park. Mm-hmm. And when I knock on doors, when I first started knocking on doors, people were very surprised to see somebody down here asking for a vote. And I have met so many good people, whether on Gifford or Seymour, and the same people that I go back to on Shonard Street, that are willing to have a good conversation, very happy to see an elected official coming, knocking on their door and talking with them.
What are you aware of as some of the maybe more specific challenges facing residents here? And what are their concerns? What are you hearing either individually or at neighborhood groups or meetings?
What I hear also a lot of is also the crime and the drug usage. I mean, if you can't feel safe in your own home, then that's a concern, right? Everybody just wants to feel safe in their home. But the way I look at it is too is also, you know, educational issues and language barriers and kids that are going to school and they're underprepared when they get to school. And from there, because of so many different socioeconomic factors, they start life behind the eight ball and they're not able to succeed. But hopefully, you know, working with state grant money and programs are administered through the county in conjunction with the city, programs that can help early education intervention, can help eighth graders get in a jobs program, that program administered through Hillside. We can't keep sending kids to school underprepared, language barriers, hungry, and expect them to succeed.
The neighborhood is rich with resources that cater to the various needs of residents. The Huntington Family Center, there's the Spanish Action League, there's the health center run by St. Joe's, food pantries at the churches, Hillside Children's Center, Head Start, Boys and Girls Clubs, pro-literacy. And most of those agencies work in concert with the county and social services. This is perhaps the tougher question, though. Are people availing themselves of those programs, perhaps in an effort to lift themselves out of poverty? The resources are there, but, you know, are the resources working and are the residents taking advantage of them?
That's a good question, and I know that...
And you may not have the answer, I understand that.
well, I know everything you just mentioned. They're fantastic organizations, and they reach out, and they're very busy, you know. We do have this issue of poverty. We do have the near west side of the neighborhood feeling, you know, maybe left out or ignored. But what can we do to make it better? I think the best thing we could do is make sure that we continue to fund those programs. It's unfortunate because if people aren't taking advantage of it, what can you do? What can I do as a lawmaker to force somebody to say, okay, well, there are resources available. There are jobs programs. There are rideshare programs. There's early intervention programs. There are programs that say, okay, we'll get you into the culinary arts. We're going to get into the trades, urban jobs task force. But if they don't want to, you just can't make them.
Is that part of the frustration, at least on your end? I mean, obviously, we can't force anyone to do anything they don't want to do. But that, you know, as a legislator, you're kind of limited in what you can do, even though the county does, you know, administratively take care of a lot of the social services in concert with those many organizations.
I guess the frustration is, so we appropriate the money, we do everything we can do. I'll ask for more every budget, I'll keep asking for more. I just worry, when do we see the fruits of our efforts, right? At what point in time do we say, okay, well, you're right, we're heading in the right direction. And statistical data tells us that we're not. We're hopeful people get on the right track. We're hopeful we have some programs that get people who want to go to work to work, and we hope we just continue to be successful with them. There's a lot of people who live within the Near West Side who are proud neighbors, who want to see the generational poverty end. And I think that a lot of lawmakers, whether it be city lawmakers, county lawmakers, you heard the new-to-be county executive, right, talk about it. And I'm listening intently because I have the poorest neighborhood, one of the poorest neighborhoods in the country.
There's no doubt that city and county representatives are sensitive to the troubling levels of poverty impacting a substantial number of Syracuse residents. They're also clearly mindful that as individual lawmakers, they're limited in terms of what they can do to help. Third District Councilor Susan Boyle hopes there's a solution to the community's transportation struggles.
It's very difficult for people to get their kids to school, get to work, get home from work, get their kids from school, you know, all using public transportation if they don't have a car. It's very challenging, and I hear about that quite a bit.
Fifth District Councilor Joe Driscoll knows some residents are understandably worried about just getting by.
Oftentimes they're working two or three jobs, trying to make ends meet, just treading water. So they don't really, you know, have the time to investigate, go to community meetings and learn who their counselors are and engage in the system as much as they should. But I hope that's changing.
County legislator Chris Ryan says the poverty and crime in this part of the 8th District can feel almost impossible to escape.
That's the stigma and the reputation that they have to live under. And, you know, who wouldn't help but feel alienated to a certain extent? And it's unfortunate.
For City Limits, I'm Scott Willis.
Thanks for listening to City Limits, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media. Find more from this series at citylimitsproject.org and subscribe in Apple Podcasts for automatic delivery of new episodes.